Welcome to the Luxfer Group fourth quarter conference call. We will first hear from Luxfer Chief Executive Brian Purvis, who will provide a market overview, followed by Group Financial Director Andy Beeden, who will review financial performance. Brian will then return to sum up and offer an outlook. After that, Brian and Andy will take your questions. To make sure that as many questioners as possible get a chance to speak, we request that you initially ask only one question. And after you have heard the answer, we will give you the opportunity for a follow-up question. If you would like to ask additional questions, our operators will place you back in line. We thank you for your cooperation. We now turn the call over to Brian Purvis.
Thank you. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Luxfer conference call on the fourth quarter of 2013 and full year 2013. I will now take you through the summary of the results and the market situation, and Andy will go on to talk of the detail on the financials. Trading during the fourth quarter followed a similar pattern to the earlier parts of the year, with, disappointingly, our European operations continuing to struggle. Several customers deferred shipments out of December. Our overall revenue was lower than we expected, with two matters to be noted. Firstly, in November, it became apparent that the expected launch of the 2013 standard breathing air kits was going to be delayed because of a mistake by the testing authority. The SCBA, or life support market, is our single biggest market sector, with nearly $60 million of mainly composite cylinder sales in 2013, driven by our global contracts with the three largest suppliers of such equipment. Since the industry became aware of the delay, demand for our cylinders has slowed. Secondly, we had expected to be shipping bulk gas transportation modules to Australia under a new contract. Our customer took rather longer to finalize their contract with the mining operation involved, and while the order is now secured, shipping will now be over March to June of 2014. Although sales were down, sales mix was good, and costs were controlled, so operating margins were higher, and the operating profit impact was held at $1 to $1.5 million. Despite the lower trading profit, with the benefit of the work that Andy and his team have been doing to reduce the marginal tax rate, adjusted fully diluted EPS of 40 cents was actually well above the consensus forecast for the quarter. In looking at the adverse trading profit variances to prior year, it is important to remember that there is approximately $3 million per annum of incremental cost being incurred as a direct consequence of our listing in October 2012, some of which is one-off expenditure, such as the costs of implementing Sarbanes-Oxley compliant systems. Looking at the sales revenue movement, slides 5 and 6 track through from the 2012 fourth quarter result at the top of the schedule through to the 2013 result at the bottom. In our Electron division, the comparison year-on-year is still influenced by the reduction in rare earth surcharges. But cerium prices now appear to have stabilized, and therefore surcharges are not expected to be important to explaining movements in 2014. Stripping the 2013 movement out, underlying sales are lower by some $4 million in the quarter versus a year ago. The European arm of our zirconium business suffered from a number of customers delaying deliveries. Indeed, at short notice, one automotive customer closed their factory for a three-week period over the holiday season. Having said that, there were small positive signs in the order book at the end of the year. Slide 6 and the cylinder business. The cylinder business had a weaker quarter in terms of overall demand. Sales revenue in Q4 was down by $7 million on last year, with continuing low levels of activity in our European aluminum facilities. Demand for composite SCBA cylinders was held back by the delayed NIOSH standard, while alternative fuel was no better than last year, as cylinders intended for the Australian virtual pipeline contract ended up in stock. Over the year, sales are up by $15 million, but the increase in composite sales is more than twice this level, while demand for aluminum cylinders, especially in Europe, was well down in 2012, which was admittedly an exceptionally good year for sales of aluminum products. We believe the underlying demand for SCBA kits, mainly for firemen's breathing apparatus, to be very strong in the US. The unexpected requirement to retest all of the new 2013 standard kits has, however, introduced an estimated 4-month delay, with end of June 2014 now being the cutoff date for selling kits made to the earlier 2007 standard. We currently expect the new kits to be launched at some point in April. Looking at our strategic growth projects on alternative fuel cylinders, I'm pleased with the profitability of the ex-Dynatec plants, and we will not refer to them separately in 2014 and beyond, as I believe we have achieved our objectives and integrated them fully into the cylinder division. There is much excitement in the gas containment industry about the prospective use of compressed natural gas to power Class 8 trucks in the US. Cummins Westport are advising that around 93% of their new natural gas engines are being specified to run on compressed gas rather than liquefied gas. The most popular cylinder is shaping up to be 26 inches in diameter, a size that is currently not possible to achieve with an unwelded aluminum liner. For some time, we have been working on Type 4 cylinders with a high-density polyethylene liner in place of the aluminum. This gives much greater flexibility on diameter, and the bulk of the strength in a composite cylinder comes from the carbon fiber wrapping pattern. We are getting close to launch, and our newly signed agreement to purchase a purpose-built manufacturing facility will be very useful in that regard. On gas transportation modules, while earlier calls have focused on our joint venture with GTM Technologies, which is largely focused on North America, the ex-Dynatec German plant, now Luxfer Germany, also has experience in this area, and it is this operation that has won the order to supply bulk gas transportation modules for the virtual pipeline project in Australia. The gas will be taken some 200 kilometres from the nearest pipeline to a massive iron ore mine in Western Australia. The operators of the mine intend to convert their power generation from diesel to compressed natural gas, saving many millions of dollars along the way and improving their environmental impact. Although we have had contracts for as many cylinders before, such as the Dallas Area Rapid Transport Bus, the added value of building the modules, which go straight onto the flatbed of the truck and trailers, makes it our most valuable single alternative fuel order to date, at between $10 million and $15 million US dollars. Between alternative fuel cylinders and systems and gas transportation modules, we invoiced $50 million worth of sales in 2013, up from $20 million in 2012, where, of course, we only had a part-year contribution from Dynatec. At a later date, the Type 4 cylinders mentioned earlier may also be used in some bulk gas applications, although there are more engineering issues with polyethylene liners over the amount of heat generated on the rapid fill and emptying cycles typical of this application. On magnesium in civil aircraft, we continue to work with a number of seat manufacturers on their prospective use of our Electron alloys in their seat designs. We issued an announcement a few days ago about a first such use by a company called Zim Flugsitz, a secondary level German seat manufacturer. The seats and the components made from our alloys are identical to those we would expect to see in a commercial airliner. But as this application is for an aircraft carrying less than 20 passengers, it is not covered by the FAA regulation that we have been seeking to change. It is nonetheless a milestone, which we hope will encourage the mainstream manufacturers. Meanwhile, we are doing a lot of research into improving the buy-to-fly ratio by, for example, providing components in much nearer to finished form. Andy Beeden will now take you through some of the financial detail.
Thank you, Brian, and welcome everyone to the call. Brian covered the divisional sales analysis, and my first slide, slide 9, shows how that consolidates into the group revenue changes for Q4 and the full year. Total revenue for Q4 2013 was $116 million, with net revenue of $115 million. And the rare earth chemical surcharge was only $1 million. The group's underlying net revenue was down 9%, or $11.4 million, adjusting for FX translation differences of a positive $0.7 million, with both divisions having a weaker quarter due to the factors Brian outlined before. For the full year, the revenue was therefore $481.3 million. A fall from the $511.6 million last year, but this was mainly a result of the rare earth surcharge being reduced to customers by $32.1 million after rare earth costs fell. Translation differences were a negative $1.5 million for the year, and therefore underlying trading revenue was up a small amount at $3.3 million. Turning to the trading profit results and slide 10. In Q4 2013, on the back of lower sales, trading profit was down at $15 million when compared to $16.1 million for Q4 2012. Electron's profit was down from $11.8 million in Q4 2012 to $10.2 million in Q4 2013. The division's trading margin was only slightly down at 19.7% versus 19.9% last year. Gas Cylinders' profit was up at $4.8 million compared to $4.3 million for Q4 2012, consistent with its improved performance in 2013. Trading profit margin was also improved at 7.5% versus 6.1% for Q4 2012. And therefore, the group's Q4 trading margin was 12.9%, higher than the 12.4% for Q4 2012. Looking at the full year performance, we have provided a series of bridges from 2012 to 2013 for each division and the group. These are slides 11 to 13 and are designed to show the change in profits, as we would explain them in detail in the 20F filing, which we made later this month. Slide 11 shows the group's profit bridge, tracking the movement from $68.5 million in 2012 to $59.2 million for 2013. Looking at that slide, FX translation reduced profits by $0.4 million, the weaker trading, predominantly in Europe, and also US defense markets reduced profits by $6.5 million, with the net changes in raw materials and sales prices having a group-wide net benefit of $0.4 million. FX transaction differences were a negative $2.2 million. We had production efficiencies of a net benefit of $1.7 million. Share-based compensation charges following the IPO were $1.3 million, and other cost increases were $1 million. Slide 12 shows the same analysis, but for the Electron division. You can see the key negative variance here is the weaker sales volume and associated mix of sales, which reduced profits by $10 million. There was also a margin impact due to changes in net selling prices when compared to the total average fall in raw material costs, particularly in automotive sectors, and this did reduce profits by $2.7 million. There were some production inefficiencies too of $0.4 million, which we raised in earlier calls due to lower utilization in the plants, again, mainly in Europe. Electron's apportionment of the share-based compensation was $0.7 million. However, there were some significant cost savings achieved during the year of $2.9 million. Slide 13 shows the same analysis, but for the Gas Cylinders division. The profit improvement being driven mainly by the improving trading variance of $6.6 million. This includes Hello, everyone. I believe that we were cut off through a telecoms problem, and I think that the point in the presentation that we were up to, which I believe was looking at the Gas Cylinders profitability year on year, which would be slide 13.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. So this was the same analysis as we've seen for the other divisions. The profit improvement for gas cylinders being due to the improved trading variance of $6.6 million, which includes the benefits of the Dynatec acquisition, which added alternative fuel cylinder capacity for the year. Raw material costs were lower, and we had some net sales price increases, which were also beneficial. Production efficiencies were achieved of $2.1 million, helped by our automation projects. Employment and other costs were higher, up at $3.9 million. But this includes investment in the alternative fuels and sales distribution areas, along with costs in other areas such as research and development, including the IOS medical oxygen delivery system. Turn to the full income statement on slide 14. For Q4, the total gross margins were higher at 25.9% for Q4 2013 versus 23.9% for Q4 2012. But with sales being lower for the quarter, the gross profit was down to $30 million versus $31.1 million. Administrative expenses are very similar at $13.2 million versus $13 million. We had a $1.8 million charge for restructuring and similar costs, of which $1.7 million was a one-off actuarial charge in the USA relating to the take-up of a cash buyout or cash settlement offer to our deferred members of our U.S. defined benefit pension plan, which is already closed, this being mainly funded by plan assets. This enables us to reduce the gross liabilities in the USA pension scheme by $11.7 million, which is part of a longer-term strategy to find ways to de-risk the pension liabilities across the whole group. After these costs, we had an operating profit of $13.2 million, with interest costs of $1.6 million and IAS 19 revised pension finance charges of $1.1 million, the profit before tax was $10.5 million. This compares to $10.7 million for Q4 2012. The final quarter tax charge was only 16%. This was a result of realizing the benefit of various tax saving measures, which I have spoken about before, but include the UK patent box credits, utilization of tax losses, and optimizing state tax allocations in the USA. I will cover this further in slide 15 in a few moments. At the bottom of slide 14, you can see the EPS for ADS holders was 33 cents on unadjusted earnings and 41 cents on adjusted net income. There is a non-GAAP reconciliation for adjusted net income in the slide appendices. Looking at the full year, the adjusted EBITDA is $76.6 million. Net income is $34.1 million, and adjusted net income is $39.8 million. EPS per ADS for the full year was $1.48 on the adjusted net income basis, and though not on the slide, the fully diluted figure is $1.42 per ADS. These figures were in fact higher than we had predicted at Q3 due to attaining the better than forecasted tax savings in Q4. So turning to slide 15, you can see two key things from the analysis of the group's performance by major trading regions. One, it was the UK operating businesses which suffered in 2013 when compared to 2012, but this was mainly a result of weaker sales and profits from exports into mainland Europe. Two, the change in the effective tax rates. The UK government did reduce its tax rate during 2013, and this had a 1.25% impact on the effective UK rate. But with a much larger percentage of profits be made in higher tax jurisdictions, like the USA, the tax-saving measures that we've talked about before enabled us to avoid a potential charge as high as $14.7 million based on 2012 tax rates. So the $12.6 million 2013 charge represents a $2.1 million tax saving. The effective group rate was 27%, based on the same mix of profits. I am currently targeting around 28% effective rate for 2014. The next slide, number 16, shows the consolidated balance sheet. Overall, invested capital in the operating businesses was $227.1 million, net of pension deficits of $68 million, as at the 31st December 2013. The point-in-time pension deficits fell by $29 million from $97 million at the end of 2012. This being due to better asset returns, slightly higher bond yields, along with our own deficit repayments. The vast majority of the 2013 year-end deficit is in the UK defined benefit plan. Net assets, or shareholders' equity, of the group has risen to $191.7 million, up $42.9 million from the end of 2012. Net debt minus cash, is now $35.4 million. Turning to the cash flow on slide 17, our operating cash flow for Q4 2013 was a positive $7.3 million. This was after paying $3.2 million of corporation tax, though we are now going to claim back $1.7 million in the first half of 2014, in relation to the various tax savings I've mentioned before. Looking at investment cash flows, we made total investments of $13.3 million in Q4 2013, which included capital expenditure on new plant and equipment of $10.1 million, the largest single investment being in the expansion of our composite cylinder production facilities in Riverside, California, which has been operating at full capacity for much of 2013. A further $2.3 million was on intangible assets, the largest element being new ERP computer systems, which are SOX compliant, and some development costs in relation to our major strategic growth initiatives, including CNG cylinders and related system technologies, ChemCap products, and Electron 43 alloy technology for aircraft seating. An additional $1 million was invested in the U.S. Gas Transportation Module JV to fund that business going forward. Cash flow before financing was therefore an outflow of $6 million. After paying dividends and net interest of $3.9 million, the net cash outflow was an outflow of $9.9 million. For the full year, we generated operating cash flows after tax of $37.1 million versus $69 million for 2012. 2012 was significantly higher due to higher operating profits, but also a change in working capital. Working capital fell in 2012 due to the fall in rare earth costs and a reduction in our rare earth inventory levels. At the end of 2013, across the group, our inventory levels are higher, due in part to the delay in the very large Australian gas transportation order moving into 2014, and Electron on the back of a stronger order book at the end of 2013, and the impact of the delayed shipments in Electron zirconium operation, which Brian explained earlier. The next slide shows return on invested capital, which was 24% in the quarter, compared to 31% for Q4 2012, lower because of the reduced profits. The full year was still a 22% return on invested capital. My final slide relates to our banking facilities, which we have just agreed to extend out to April 2019. As you can see, we have switched the agreement into US dollars from pound sterling. The committed size has been increased from £70 million to $150 million. We have added an uncommitted accordion of $50 million, which means the facility can be extended in future to up to a $200 million facility. All the funds are available for acquisitions as well as organic growth funding. I am pleased that there was competition to join the extended facility, and we have welcomed on board RBS and Santander, meaning that we now have five major banks in the banking syndicate. The interest rate margin is also reduced for debt below 2x EBITDA by 0.25%, and though the facility is larger at $150 million, the non-utilization fees should be broadly the same in total when you compare them to the current smaller £70 million facility. The facilities remain unsecured, though cross-guaranteed by all the UK and US businesses. There is relaxation in the acquisition control levels before bank approvals are required, though we, of course, work closely with all our banks on any significant funding matters. Thank you. I'll now hand you back to Brian to sum up.
Thank you, Andy. In summary then, looking at quarter four, European demand remained weak and a number of orders were slipped by customers into 2014. Improved sales mix and lower costs limited the damage to trading profits, and good tax planning allowed us to actually exceed the market expectation on earnings per share. Looking at the whole year, while the trading profit is below our initial expectations, the board feels that there were many positives in 2013. The two Dynatec plants are now fully integrated, and despite there being a drag on margin for much of the year, the cylinder division's operating margin improved by around 1 percentage point, in line with our guidance. The alternative fuel sales got to the $50 million figure that I had forecast and could have been more. Although there was some late disruption to the SCBA market in the US, there is strong underlying demand. The price of cerium, our biggest rare earth purchase, appears to have stabilized almost back at the levels that were there in 2010 before the Chinese export quotas were introduced. We are seeing strong interest in our magnesium alloys for civil aerospace applications. Our profit issues are focused on our European operations. The North American plants have actually held their own pretty well. And finally, some real improvements have been made to our marginal tax rate. Looking at 2014, we remain positive about 2014 with an expectation of, firstly, further growth in two of our main markets for composite cylinders, compressed natural gas and breathing air, or SCBA, and secondly, of progressively improving European markets for electron products. In the short term, as announced by MSA and others, sales in the US SCBA market are being affected by the delayed regulatory approval of the 2013 standard kits. We believe that the delay is of the order of 4 months, so we are currently expecting sales to pick up again during quarter two. We are juggling various products between facilities in order to reserve as much capacity as possible for that event. The impact of the tragic accident at the facility of one of our two main military flare customers is more difficult to analyse. Shipments to them have been suspended, and from previous experience, the investigation into these accidents and the process changes required to prevent a repeat can take many months. Of course, our flare business is already depressed, so the impact is not what it would have been 5 years ago, but it is still going to hurt. With the Department of Defense still in an overstocked situation, it seems unlikely that they will switch production to another source or require a rapid catchback. We remain focused on delivering the medium to long-term potential for the business, driven largely by our strategic projects, and we remain very positive on them. The alternative fuel sector remains the best near-term prospect for rapid growth. While our Type 3 aluminum line products are, we believe, the state of the art, there are undoubtedly applications where customers are demanding larger diameters than is feasible and or cost-effective using aluminum liners. Accordingly, we have been working for some time on Type 4 cylinders based on our high-density polyethylene liners. The first of these products is now in production at our Riverside plant, but that plant does not today have the capability or the capacity to take on large volumes of Type 4 cylinders. Accordingly, we have committed to acquire a facility in Utah, which does have the capability and the capacity, but without the product. Putting these two together, as we now can, will enable us to fully address the emerging opportunity in Class 8 trucks, where truck OEMs are projecting between 8,000 and 10,000 natural gas-powered heavy-duty trucks being sold in the next 12 months. Thank you, and we will now take questions.
At this time, I would like to inform everyone, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then the number 1 on your telephone keypad. If your question has been answered and you wish to remove yourself from the queue, press the pound key. We ask that you please pick up your handset to provide optimal sound quality. Your first question comes from the line of Julian Mitchell of Credit Suisse.
Hi, Julian. Hello. So thanks. Yeah, I guess the first question was on the Electron business. You know, in 2013, you had a sales price, a hit, obviously, of over $30 million. I just wondered, you know, what are your assumptions as we move, you know, for 2014 on that pricing point specifically in terms of the EBIT bridge?
We had a modest variance between the pricing and the material cost reduction. Fairly modest. I mean, I think it was $2.7 million.
On net basis across all businesses.
We have, and we mentioned in the call last time around, we have seen quite a lot of pricing pressure from the automotive sector. And so in order to retain and indeed win new business, we have dropped prices a little bit. I mentioned in the document that we have won some new business in that sector, which is actually the first that we've won for some time. And that involved dropping the price a little bit. But we're talking relatively modest amounts, a couple of dollars per kilo. And the margins that we retain at that level are still very attractive and, at or above the average margin for the products out of the Electron division. So I think it's more important at the moment that we start to grow volume again than that we try and hold the prices which have been there over the last couple of years.
Got it. And then within the within the cylinders business, you had about a 22% incremental margin or something like that in 2013. I just wondered if that, low 20s incremental margin is what you expect, for the business looking ahead. And related to that, the sort of $3.9 million drag on profit last year from employment and other net costs, is that a run rate we should expect for this year as well? Thank you.
From a margin point of view, we've been fairly clear that we do have an aspiration to improve the margins in the cylinder business, but it is a multi-year program. So the kind of 1 percentage point improvement that we achieved last year was roughly what we were targeting, and we would like to achieve that each year for the next several years in order to improve the operating margin of the business, from where it started at 6% to getting into double digits. And the road will not necessarily be smooth, but that is our objective, and we think that there is enough work going on the automation side and in terms of the mix switch towards composite to enable that to take place. In terms of the employment costs, certainly we have increased the infrastructure to support our addressing of growth markets like alternative fuel. And we are incurring some quite hefty development costs on projects like IOS, and that will stay for some time, certainly until the IOS project goes into the market. The other thing that always crops up when we look at year-on-year employment costs is a question of bonuses. We offer bonuses to local management at business unit level based on performance. And the bonuses earned in the cylinder business last year, which enjoyed certainly North America strong growth, were quite healthy, where the previous year they weren't. And so year on year, you do tend to get that effect if there's a fluctuation in the performance of the business. Of course, the there were very few bonuses paid in the Electron division, or sadly at head office. So hopefully in 2014 we might see some further increase on that side. But it's all very much linked, of course, to the profitability of the business.
Great, thank you.
Okay.
Our next question comes from the line of Luke Volta of Jefferies.
Hello, gentlemen. Quick, I guess firstly on the new cylinder facility, seems like an interesting opportunistic purchase there. Can you talk about, so it seems like $3 million was the initial cost. Can you talk about what you expect CapEx requirements to be at the facility to get that geared up to make the Type 4 cylinders? And then also, you gave some numbers around what the sales figures could be for Class 8 trucks using the cylinders this year. Can you give us any sense of what that could amount to in terms of market potential for Luxfer? I guess for longer term, maybe not so focused on 14.
Well, just looking at the facility in the first place, I mean, as acquired, it does have existing capacity which we can use. And that capacity is approximately 4,000 of these large Type 4 cylinders. And so the level of capital expenditure involved is not great. Obviously, there will be investing in the business to fund it to grow the business. But from a CapEx point of view, relatively modest to utilize that existing level of capacity. If we should want to, and we hope that we will want to expand the facility, then the capacity can be, we believe, doubled to more like the 7,000 to 8,000 level. And the investment should be relatively modest, but would be of the order of $3, $4, $5 million.
That's right. And Brian, you have, as well as paying the $3 million up front, you know, once the production ramps up, you've probably got another $3 million of working capital, which obviously will just come through the cash flow side.
Yeah. And the market for these Type 4 cylinders, I mean, the 8,000 to 10,000 trucks that I mentioned is still a relatively modest share of the total North American truck market, where people are talking about that potentially getting to more like 30,000 trucks a year over the next 4 or 5 years. And each of these trucks will take between 2 and 4 of these large cylinders that we've talked about. So it is a big market. And the cylinders themselves are quite pricey. They're because they are large cylinders and custom made for that market. They are probably around twice the price of the bus cylinders that are more established in the marketplace. So in the sort of $4,000 to $5,000 range. So it's quite a big revenue market, and we certainly think that the potential is there for us to grow that sector into, you know, several tens of millions of dollars, but it will take a little time to do it. This year, starting round about the middle of the year, we hope it will be several million dollars of revenue in the current year, but developing it into several tens of millions of dollars over the course of the next 3 years. And the deferred consideration that's referred to in the document is very much an earn-out. It's sharing some of the benefit of that with the owners of the business that have sold to us if the business performs the way that we and they think that it can do.
That was actually my next question was, how much profit would have to be generated over that three-year time frame for the full $6 million earn-out to be paid?
We'd be safely generating an annual profit out of the business of $5 million.
That's right.
About.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the the share of the enterprise value, incremental enterprise value, is quite reasonable.
Okay. And in the CNG side of the business, you've got the $10 million Australian order going to flow through for next year. Should we assume that the $50 million or so of revenue that you generated in 2013 can be repeated for next year?
Yes, I very much hope so. It may be in a different mix, but we have, as you know, been putting additional capacity into the Riverside plant. That's kind of happening as we speak. And I've previously talked about trying to aspire towards a $70-75 million level, and that remains our aspiration. And that will be a mix of the existing trash truck market, the gas transportation modules, and in the second half of the year, the Type 4 cylinders as well.
Okay, and if I could just one last one. On 2014, you've given the initial expectation that you'll have year-on-year earnings growth, though despite some weakness in the first half. Is there anything you can say that could, I guess, give us some sense of magnitude of what you're expecting for the full year and the first half of 2014 versus the second half of 2013? Are we going to see a step down before a potential step up in the second half? Thanks.
I think on the full year, we feel it's a little early to do more than say we expect a year-on-year improvement. With the headwinds that we referred to, quarter one, I think, is fairly definitely going to be down on prior year. But the other quarters, we would hope to be an improvement. Obviously, we're not quite sure on quarter two what the impact is going to be of the deferred military power to business, but we should start to see catch-up on the SCBA business in that quarter. So overall, I'm feeling fairly neutral on that one. But even back in the conference call last time round, we did say that we felt that the second half of 2014 was likely to be the stronger, because that's really, we think we still need that long to see the European market start to really pick up. And some of the incremental business that I referred to earlier on the zirconium side and the automotive side is business which is for 2015 model year production. So that will start around about September of the current year. Just one other point on your earlier bit. The virtual pipeline contract in Australia, we said at least $10 million. It's in the $10 to $15 million range. And the precise figure won't be established until the pipeline is in operation and they see what the maximum capacity required is. But it will certainly be well north of $10 million. It probably won't exceed $15
million. Thanks a lot.
Okay. Our next question comes from the line of Chris McDougall of Westlake Securities.
Hello, gentlemen. Thanks for taking the question. I appreciate all the color during the call and the Q&A session. So on the Type 4 cylinders that you're going to be launching in the new facility for trucks, what sort of a ramp time should we expect there? So if you, when will you start up that facility?
Well, we're actually producing some prototype cylinders at the moment in our Riverside plant, but the production will be migrated over to the new plant, and the one that we're doing at the moment is a smaller diameter, more like a 21 or 22 inch cylinder, which is probably going to go into the pickup truck market. The larger diameters will be launched in the new facility, and we're still finalizing the designs on those. So we expect those to be launched at some time during quarter two, and usually what we have to do is to launch with a parent design, and then we spin off different lengths and diameters off of that parent design. So it will be progressive, and the 2014 impact from a sales revenue point of view will still be relatively modest, I think, as I said earlier, that we should manage to get several million dollars worth of sales, but it's unlikely to be as much as $10 million. However, getting the business to the several tens of millions of dollars within 3 years, clearly we'd expect the contribution in 2015 to be quite material.
Yeah, sure. That sounds good. And then on competing versus other people making Type 4 cylinders, what are the major factors that you're going to be able to compete on from product design and quality? Or is this just a market that's growing so fast that that there's a bit of a threshold and then it's a matter of having production volume?
Well, it certainly helps that there's an expectation of rapid growth in the market. It is quite a crowded area already, with businesses which really haven't had much of a presence in the gas containment market. So today in this sector, we've probably got Quantum as the market leader. And now, the Luxfer product, which is still subject to final design, we expect to be the lightest product by capacity of any of the competition. We expect to have intellectual property around the Boss Liner interface, which is the area of a Type 4 cylinder which is the most susceptible to leakage. And while Type 3 cylinders with an aluminum liner, that's not an issue. With Type 4, it can be. And so we do expect to have some intellectual property in that area. Beyond that, you have to, I think, factor in that reputation in the whole area of high-pressure gas containment is important. Luxfer has been around in this sector for the last 60 years, and we have an exemplary track record both on service and the security of the product. And these products do carry sort of 250 atmospheres of pressure. It's pretty important that you know what you're doing, and that people recognize that and the reputation that you've built in the marketplace. We've also got, we like to think, a very well-developed sales, distribution, and marketing effort, being a global business and indeed the largest gas containment business in the world. So we think we've got a lot of things going for us, and we certainly wouldn't be entering this market without an expectation to develop a leading position in it.
Great. Thank you very much, Brian.
Okay.
Our next question comes from the line of Jonathan Sachs of Stonehill Capital.
Good morning.
Hi, John.
Just a couple of different questions on a few different topics. For 2014, can you tell us a little bit about your CapEx expectations?
Yes, Jonathan. I think we gave that some guidance on that in the last call, and we're targeting between $25 and $30 million at the moment. Right in between the middle of that, so the sort of 27, 28.
Okay. And do you view that as an elevated level, or do you view that as sort of normal go-forward level?
It certainly isn't a steady state level. So in there is clearly a number of growth projects, particularly in on the composite cylinder side. There's still, expansion of those facilities ongoing, and there would be more investment within the Electron division this year. So it's certainly above a steady state, but as you know, we're targeting expansion of certain key new businesses.
Right. And then in terms of the sort of extra pension payment or the below the line pension payment, if you will, which I think historically has been $10 to $12 million. What is the go forward level of that in light of some of the changes you had to the pension structure?
It's going to be very similar at the moment, Jonathan. So we're in the middle of an agreed level of pension payments for the different schemes. So if you remember, it's roughly a deficit repayment in the UK of $8 million. And the US does vary between $2 and $3 million. So on average, it's $10 to $11 million of deficit repayments. But as you can see from the year-end results, we have made very good progress in reducing that deficit from consolidated $97 million to $66
million. The U.S. element that we took action on last year was opportunistic and is something that we chose to do at the time. We could have chosen a different time. And over the course of the next several years, we want to just explore such opportunities to reduce the scale of the absolute scale of the liability, and therefore manage the risk associated with that downwards. So we were pretty pleased to be able to do that in the US last year. It may be that the next time that we do something like that, it will be in the UK. But it's very much opportunistic when we see a cost-effective way of doing it, and we have the funds available to fund it.
Great. And then on the facility that you acquired in Utah, can you just explain a little bit, what was that facility doing prior to your acquisition? Was that part of a larger company? Was that a standalone business? And how is what you're making different than what they were making? And also, did it have existing sales and or EBITDA? And can you give us a rough sense of that?
The facility, which is in Brigham City in Utah, was purpose-built for the Type 4 cylinders. However, it was built as a subcontract facility to manufacture Type 4 cylinders for 3M. And the facility has been empty for several months. So the subcontract arrangement with 3M hasn't so far really worked out for them, and they're very short of volume. So we were able to step in and pick the business up relatively modestly for a relatively modest price. But they do have some good expertise. They've got a workforce experienced in manufacturing Type 4 cylinders. The management there seems a decent bunch of people, and they have some knowledge that's of value to us. They have manufactured around 2,000 Type 4 cylinders to date, but not many in recent months. So they were suffering a bit, and we were able to step in and pick up the business for really quite a modest price, given the growth potential of this business and the value that the future value that it can bring to us.
And the cylinders that they manufactured, are they the same type as the cylinders that you intend to manufacture, but they were smaller diameter?
They will be they're the same type in the sense that they are Type 4 plastic-lined cylinders with carbon fiber wrapping, but the design will be completely different because the 3M product has very many aspects where 3M have the intellectual property. So the design that we have is completely different to that, or certainly doesn't involve any 3M intellectual property. And that's perfectly feasible. We already have our own carbon fiber wrapping patterns, for example. We use different resins and adhesives. The liner will be made by a completely different manufacturer. So at the end of the day, superficially, they will look quite similar, but they are completely different designs.
Okay, great. And then last question. Can you just tell us a little bit about what's happening in pricing, either generally for the business or by division? And the reason why I ask is it's wonderful to see the margins so strong, and I'm trying to get a sense, is that purely a function of mix, or is there also an underlying pricing movement in that? Thank you.
I think the quarter four margin is mainly mix. And you shouldn't really assume that will be perpetuated go forward. We do have that fluctuates quarter by quarter depending on the business that's going through there. There is a modest reduction in pricing in the zirconium automotive sector, which we have done to start to grow the volume there again. And that I would think will be perpetuated going forward. But it's relatively modest. I would certainly think less than a percentage point impact on the margin, and it is well worth doing that to get growth back through. Because as we've said before, the zirconium business is a relatively high fixed cost business, very high margin product, and it's all about getting volume through the plant to recover the overhead and get it back into sensible profitability, and that's what we're about.
Thank you so much.
Once again, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star, then the number 1 on your telephone keypad. Your next question comes from the line of Phil Gibbs of KeyBanc Capital.
Hey, Brian and Andy, how are you?
Good, thanks, Seth. I think this has probably got to be the last one, Phil, but carry on.
Okay. Just wanted to hear your progress on the industrial catalysis products and the medical stents.
On the medical stents, first of all, that is in a sort of stage 2 in-body trial at the moment, and the feedback that we're getting is quite positive. So that, as far as we are aware, remains on track. Of course, it's our biotech partner that is conducting those trials, but we do get regular feedback. The design of the material is frozen at the moment, and we are supplying the prototype material out of our dedicated facility here at Manchester for that. So that's it's probably over the course of the last year, it's probably slipped by a few months, but we're still looking at a 2016 launch, and it remains a very, very exciting prospect. I'm sorry, the first one you asked about was?
I just asked about ChemCat.
Yep. We're making some progress there. It's still very lumpy. We have some business that was deferred from quarter four into quarter one, so quarter one in that area will be quite healthy. And over the course of the year, we do expect further growth. We're still working with a very great many catalyst makers. The big breakthrough project that we're hoping to get, there's still no sign of that, but it is still out there. And our customer told us that they put it into their budget for 2014, but we're still waiting to finally get an order for that. And, of course, as far as we are aware, it's for a new plant which is being built by his customer, and so the whole timetable is fairly fluid still, but it's still out there. We're just waiting on it to finally happen.
Thanks. And just Andy, any color you could give on tax rate for this year, please?
Yeah, 20. I'm working starting at a rate of 28%.
Okay. Thanks very much.
At this time, there are no further questions. I will now return the call to management for any additional or closing remarks.
No, that's fine. Thank you very much. I think the market is just opening, so we'll call a halt there, and we'll look forward to updating you actually not that far away on quarter one.
Okay, thank you.
A recording of this conference call will be available for replay in about 2 hours. To hear the recording, call 800-585-8367 in the U.S., 0800-917-2646 in the UK, or 404-537-3406 in other countries. Enter conference ID code 4022689 when prompted. This information will also be available on the Luxfer Group website at www.luxfer.com. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect your lines and have a wonderful day.